Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Grand Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Molly and Haw.
Bigs time.
The Bigs Report.
With Brad Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigsy.
His name is Brad Bigs.
Brad Bigs talks football with you.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Brad Bigs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know it. You got the story. The coaching staff being put together pretty quickly. The Bears getting it together 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, they've been moving pretty quickly. You know, you think about the fact that Ben Johnson was they agreed to terms a week ago today, and they were able to get all three coordinators in place now. They've got some position coaches signed and sealed, so they are off to a good start in terms of just getting everybody in place so they can begin meeting and you know, putting the thing together. You got to start by evaluating your own roster. You got to then look at free agency and what moves could be there, and then eventually down the road, turn the attention to the draft.
Brad, nice job getting the first story on the Declan Doyle hiring, Richard Hightower returning. You were first on both of those. David Shaw's inclusion you also had in terms of the interview process. I wonder where that's headed. Dennis Allen's on the way, the defensive coordinator. He's a veteran we've talked about. But I'm curious, what do you think about how intentional or not that the ex-player factor is seeming to be something that would they're looking for, much like the Lions staff had ex-players. The Bears are adding Antoine Randle-El. Al Harris is to the mix. And JT Barrett as a quarterback's coach. Is that as a means of trying to emulate or copy what the Lions did, or is that just coincidental?
I think it's maybe a little bit of both, right? Like you, any staff you find, you're gonna get ex players. I mean, the previous staff had ex players, right? So that's gonna happen. They've got some younger coaches in the mix, and that's interesting, and I think you always want to have a good mix there, and we'll see how it comes together. But a handful of former players on the previous staff, and maybe they could add a couple more former players as they keep putting this thing together. You know, a big hire coming up is going to be the offensive line job.
Yep.
What's the vision for Dennis Allen in terms of a defensive line coach? Is there a possibility Travis Smith, who served in that role the past 3 years, remains in place? He worked previously under Dennis Allen when Allen was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. So they've got a history together. What's going to happen there? They've still got, you know, a handful of spots to fill out.
I was wondering about that, about Dennis Allen in particular, how much he will control the defensive staff, right? He's a guy that has had a group around him for a long time, one of these guys that's bounced around quite a bit. He's got his own kind of knowledge of the league and knows a heck of a lot more people, perhaps, than even Ben Johnson does.
Yeah, I think I would expect that Dennis Allen winds up with a couple assistants that he's got working history with, that he's familiar with, that know him, his scheme, what he likes to do, that how he likes techniques taught. But, we'll have to see. Like Al Harris and Dennis Allen, I don't think there's crossover there. But Al Harris is a guy with a proven track record and a resume as a coach. You know, previously he was pretty good playing against Jay Cutler and the Bears for the Packers. That was an awful long time ago. But, you would think that Dennis Allen would have input on some staff decisions on that side of the ball, because he's basically going to be the head coach of the defense, right? And when he's had some pretty good players, he's had some very good defenses. You kind of look at where his units have ranked overall against the run, against the pass, points allowed, different things like that. When the Saints had some big guys on defense, they ranked really well. He did a nice job. You saw growth in that unit. You saw some young players develop in New Orleans.
I think you definitely can say Al Harris knows how to get the most out of cornerbacks at Soldier Field. Good hire. So, Brad.
Al Harris got the most out of some young guys in Dallas, a few of them that kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I think players are drawn to, because the Bears have a tall task in replacing a very regarded secondary coach in John Hoke. Like, they're not replacing some guy that kind of oversaw the position. You want to go out and get a coach as good or better as Hoke, you can do that, but you've got to make the right hire in order to accomplish that goal.
Declan Doyle signed with the Saints in 2019 as an offensive assistant under Sean Payton. He stayed, worked for Dennis Allen. Then Sean Payton hired him again in Denver. What do you know about Declan Doyle that makes him worthy of the offensive coordinator title here, even though he won't be calling the plays at 28 years old?
Yeah, I believe the youngest offensive coordinator in the National Football League. Now, he's not calling plays, and so there's maybe a little bit of an asterisk with that, but you're the gold standard for these super young play callers that kind of came out of nowhere, Sean McVay, right? Like, nobody would have known that Sean McVay would take off like
he was. He was 28 when McVay, when he took over Washington.
Yeah.
Now he's a January baby. I don't know when Declan was born. So
I don't think McVay was calling plays either. John, memory serves me correct.
Jay Gruden? Was that who the coach was?
He was a Shanahan guy, right? He came in with Mike Shanahan, I believe. But at any rate, Doyle, I think the feeling is he's a fast riser, super bright, like talking to people in Denver, good communication skills. They're putting stock in him being a young coach that's kind of been taught the way by Sean Payton. So you bring him in, and he's got the offensive coordinator title, but for all intents and purposes, Ben Johnson is his own offensive coordinator. So this guy's going to have to be highly organized. Ben Johnson alluded to it in some of his comments last Wednesday following his introduction, like, the coordinator's going to have to be really on the ball with some of the early in the week stuff, preparing for the upcoming opponent while he's being pulled away to do some of the head coaching stuff, meaning some deep dives on tape, looking at possibly what they want to incorporate in the call sheet and strategy for the week before Ben Johnson can get really as deep into it that as you need. So they've got a young guy with a lot of energy, and hopefully he'll fill that role well.
What did you think of the championship games, Brad?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Ben Johnson's up for, what, assistant coach of the year, right? Mm-hmm. And so is Vic Fangio. And, man, has Fangio done a whale of a job. Mm-hmm. And when you look at some of the moves that the Eagles have made this year in terms of player acquisition via the draft, via free agency, and what Fangio's been able to get out of some of these guys, just stepping in right out of the gate, like, it was super impressive. I was thinking about it last night and a little bit earlier this morning before we started here. I think Philly has a real chance to win this game. Like, and you give the Kansas City the edge with the quarterback, although Jalen Hurts finally played a little bit better, I think, on Sunday in the win over Washington. But can Fangio sort of muddle things up for Mahomes and the Chiefs? But that Bills-Chiefs game, I think, was, if you didn't have the Bills as your dog in the fight, that game was everyone, an observer of the other 30 teams, would have wanted, right? Close game, a lot of great plays. So should be a fascinating Super Bowl, no question about that.
Eagles had 7 rushing touchdowns, tied for the most in a playoff game in NFL history with the 1940 Bears. So that's the Bears' link to yesterday. I also wonder this, Brad. When we see Saquon Barkley running all over the Commanders, and we're going to see him in the lead-up to the Super Bowl and giving the Eagles probably the best chance to win that game, how close were the Bears to ever signing Saquon Barkley in free agency last offseason?
Yeah, I don't think. Like, I mean, you're talking about a Penn State guy who pretty much everybody thought he was headed to the Eagles, right? So I don't think they were close, and you know, it wouldn't matter if they were they lost by a photo finish or they got lapped. You're still not getting the guy in the building, and Saquon Barkley wouldn't be running behind the same offensive line that he currently is in Philadelphia. Like, look at that. You're running back. You're in free agency. You got multiple teams involved. Like, why would you even consider the Bears if the Eagles' money is as good or better with the offensive line that's in Philly? Like, that's not even a conversation, is it?
No, but they were in the mix, and we had the clip from Joe Shane, I believe, talking about the Bears' interest. So I think it's a valid question based on who was in the mix,
sure,
at the time.
Like, yeah, they're in the mix. You know, they've been in the mix for a lot of guys over the years. Here's the great thing, and we've got more than enough time to dive into this in the coming months. This, by all accounts, is a slam dunk class for running backs. Like, running back might be the deepest and most talented position in this draft. Most important position for everybody? No, not by a long shot, but that is a deep, deep group. And you look at what the Bears have right now. You look at what Ben Johnson is accustomed to working with in Detroit, and you wonder, you know, is there a match here at some point for them to get a little more talent, get a little more dynamic in the backfield through the draft without having to pay, obviously, premium money in free agency. You'd love a guy like Barkley, but you know what? Bears need to hit on some players in this draft. Like, you'd love the idea of Trey Smith, the guard for the Kansas City Chiefs, reaching free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I was told back in November, it seemed highly unlikely. People right. more recently think that he could get to the open market. If he gets to the open market, guys, he's going to establish a new top tier for pay for interior offensive linemen. And it would make all the sense in the world for the Bears to make that move, right? Because he's 25, yep. 26 years old. He's got great football ahead of him. One of these days, they've got to get that guy
themselves.
For themselves yep. in the draft. So you get those 4 years at bargain basement pay before the guy then earns that kind of money. One of these days, they need the roster to be so good that it's difficult to think about how you keep a guy like that. Like, I can't imagine Kansas City lets him walk out the door. We'll have to see. It makes all the sense in the world to go after a guy like that in free agency if he indeed makes the marketplace. Man, they need to get guys like that for themselves in the draft.
Kieran Amagachi doesn't do it for you?
I want to, you know what?
No, he needs an off-season. He needs a new coach.
Yeah, he needs an off-season coach, opportunity, see where he's at. Hopefully physically he gets to a point where he's ready to roll and he stays on the field. You kind of reset with him. I think Braxton Jones will have an opportunity here depending on how things shake out. And fortunately, that injury that he had, the broken lower leg, wasn't more serious than it could have been. But I think the focus, this is just the hunch right now, the focus I think is guard-to-guard, interior of the offensive line. But you wouldn't rule out a left tackle if they were in position to get that guy.
Brad, I was wondering what your reaction was to how open agent Rick Smith, who represents Ben Johnson, was on the Bears Banter podcast with Bill Zimmerman, because Mully put it perfectly when we talked about it in the 6 o'clock hour. It was like it was an off-the-record conversation that we all have had with agents, except for it was into a podcast microphone. And it was shared with the public and revealed some details that we aren't always privy to. And I thought it was fantastic insight into the process that how Ben Johnson landed with the Bears.
Yeah, I haven't listened to the podcast yet. I've been was a little tied up trying to track some of this coaching stuff over the weekend. But listen, Rick Smith wound up representing Ben Johnson, I think, beginning back last September.
Yes.
And because Ben Johnson made a decision to make a switch, he ends up with Rick Smith, who has got a handful of other head coaches in the National Football League. And as the season played out, it became pretty apparent that Ben Johnson was going to be the hot guy or a hot guy in this cycle. And I think you know, Rick clearly had the experience and know-how to maximize that situation. Like, you've got leverage when you're the hot guy. And you've got teams that, let's face it, you've got desperate teams out there looking for a head coach. And advantage Ben Johnson and advantage Rick Smith in a situation like that, right?
Brad, what did you think of Matt Eberflus rumored to be the next defensive coordinator. With the Cowboys only gulp, they forgot the Rooney Rule. They're going to have to re-examine the Rooney Rule after a couple of these bad steps.
It's been pretty bad for a couple teams.
Yeah, it's that's a tough one. That's a tough one, and I think it just takes a little common sense for some of these people. And I think it's gotten better, though. I really do. Like, people criticize it, and are you criticizing the rule? Or are you criticizing the thought behind it, the application of it? It's gotten more people in a position to have an opportunity to discuss why they're up for a job. Like, they were really smart. They've included quarterback coach in the Rooney Rule now.
Right.
Right? Because what was one of the things they saw? Well, there wasn't diversity among offensive coordinators.
Right.
And why is that? Well, where do they come from? A lot of times they're the quarterback's coach. So let's start taking it down to that level. And so I think there's been some improvements. But Eberflus, as a possibility or a leading candidate to go to the Dallas Cowboys, would not be a surprise. He was well-regarded by the organization when he was in Dallas as a position coach. Had a good run there, had some really good young players develop under him, Sean Lee, the linebacker, being one of them. So that would not surprise me at all. And it really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, because he was well-regarded by Jerry Jones. He was well-regarded by others in the organization. And I think he's a proven guy as a defensive coordinator. So that makes a lot of sense.
Great stuff, Biggsy. Thank you, buddy. Great work.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, football man of the Chicago Tribune. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Encroachment, defense number 93. Washington has been advised that at some point the referee can award a score if this type of behavior happens again.
That would be
for
a first.
Now, it's a replay of second down.
I have never called play-by-play on an official's touchdown.
Big moment in that game. That was a lot of fun. And Mike Pereira had said that literally right before you heard that announcement from the referee. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Of all the conversations about the officiating yesterday, that was the biggest, I think, moment where the referees had an impact potentially on the game itself, a play, a score.
Well, it was
points.
You had the
points.
The tush push play, the brotherly shove, as they call it in Philly, and they were just doing everything they could. That the one guy was coming over the top.
It was absurd.
It was ridiculous.
And I wonder. I don't think that I've ever heard that before the game, and I have to admit, I wasn't aware that they could actually do that.
I wanted to see it. Once they mentioned it, and then the referees...
You wanted to see the referees just say, touchdown.
Oh, I thought that would have been unbelievable.
Touchdown.
Well, they were on, like, the inch line.
I know, but you can't guarantee anything. What if you fumble a snap?
Well, you're
right. What if you trip going backwards and the ball's in the air, and all of a sudden you got a guy going 99 yards? We've seen that before.
But they were trying to make contact before the ball was snapped. It was outrageous.
But did you know that the officials had power
no,
to
I did
award
not.
Points?
How could that ever happen?
I don't know.
That's why I wanted it to happen.
Because it's unprecedented.
Yes.
And when he said it, I thought it was just like an official getting fed up with the circumstances, like everybody else watching.
We're warning you.
It went on forever.
Them. Yeah, it went
if
out
you don't
forever.
Do that, we're going to give them a touchdown.
I'm holding my breath until I turn blue.
So that was to me the biggest moment where the officials kind of insinuated themselves into the equation.
But they didn't insinuate themselves. That was a situation where were there like two or three penalties in a row?
Yes.
The same penalty?
On purpose.
Yeah.
But they, I mean.
And they were just inching the ball.
They insinuated themselves into threatening to award points, which is something I've never seen. So I think that affects the outcome because it affects the final score. What happened in the other game, the second game that everybody's complaining about, the spot of the ball on Josh Allen's fourth down run.
Yes.
I think is more debatable, and to me, it's more understandable because there's so much gray area into, number one, what constitutes forward progress,
yes,
where the ball is spotted based on what official sees and defines as forward progress, and we don't really know. It's so ambiguous, Mully, because there's no way to really see it the way everyone else is going to see it.
It was so close, okay? It was so ridiculously close that one guy ruled it a first down and another guy ruled it a failed conversion. And so then they ended up going to the tape after ruling it, okay, it's a failed conversion. And then there wasn't enough evidence to overturn the it seemed like they could have ruled it the other way. But the other guy was just over the line and this guy was behind, whatever it was. They went with the other official's take on it. But one guy said that they had converted.
I know.
If they had said it was a conversion, I think they couldn't have gone back the other way.
No, they couldn't. I think it was too close to reverse the call on the field. Whatever the initial call would be, that they were going to stick with that. You could challenge it, but you're challenging a judgment call.
But I think the complaint is that, once again, things went well for Kansas City.
Yes.
And everybody is claiming to be sick of Kansas City. I'm sick of watching these guys.
And they're sick of hearing about them.
I mean, here's the thing. If they win this Super Bowl, which is still a big question, and I'm very curious to see how the betting line changes and shifts. But if they were to win, if Kansas City were to win, that would mean that Mahomes has four Super Bowls. He's like either right on the cusp of 30, just turned 30 or turning 30.
He came in the league in 2017.
And Tom has seven.
I know.
He'd be three away. And he'd be more than halfway there.
Within realistic distance of catching.
Exactly.
Him. There's no doubt about
which
that.
Which we did not think was going to happen.
I didn't think it was possible, and it still may not be depending on what happens. But I don't know if that one play suggests a Chiefs bias among officials. I know there's all kinds of stats, and we could spend all week talking about 2 weeks about a conspiracy theory to get the Chiefs back, whatever the case is.
Do people prefer the Chiefs? Is that the idea? Why would you want – if everyone's sick of them, why do you want them back?
Well, everyone in terms of the fan base, I don't think television executives are sick of them.
Okay.
I mean, I think they're good television.
Yeah,
they have a draw.
Taylor.
They have Taylor Swift. They have Travis Kelce. They've got Patrick Mahomes. They have Andy Reid, and they have all the commercials. So yeah, the guys who are the definitely
they've got Jake from State Farm.
They are household faces, not just names. Everybody knows what they look like and they sound like because they're used to having the State Farm ads and all those things. But I think that it does. You know, you look at people are pointing out in texters or that Xavier Worthy pass that he went up and he grabbed and took away from the defensive back, hit the ground.
You know, I got to tell you, that was a very weird play.
It was a weird play.
That was it was another play that you probably couldn't have changed based on how they gave him possession of the ball. It did look like the ball didn't move, but I don't know how he wound up with the ball.
I don't either, but the tie goes to the receiver. Yeah. It always has.
Yeah, I know.
And Worthy did a terrific job
of just staying
staying with it and getting his hands to a point where it looked like that he was the
possession
receiver.
And
that's just a play where did it hit the ground? Did it not hit the ground? There wasn't, to me, convincing evidence to say that it did.
If it did, it didn't move.
It didn't change the possession, and it didn't move at all. And so could that have been an interception? Probably should have been an interception. But when the receiver makes a play like that to make it look like he has the ball too, difficult to overturn. And I think these are judgment calls. But I don't think that they imply a Chiefs bias because it just...
Well, I mean, was it Kincaid, who's the receiver that did not catch the fourth down pass?
Dalton Kincaid, tight end,
okay.
First rounder.
So, like, if he catches that ball, exactly. They might well win the game.
A lot of these things are moot points. That's the point. So it comes down to execution. And the Bills, fair or not, they didn't execute. He could have... He went like he misjudged a pop up.
Yeah,
it was like he was saying Suzuki in right field.
Yeah.
He couldn't get in the spot where he could catch the ball. And so it bounces off him.
It's incredible that ball came out. I mean, I get it. He was getting hit, but and the pressure on the quarterback ruined the play. But it was extraordinary that he got the ball.
It was. That's Josh Allen.
Allen. Great job. Josh Allen, by the way, 1-4 in the regular season against Mahomes, 0-4 in the playoffs.
He's won 7 playoff games and never been to the Super Bowl. That's the most playoff victories by a quarterback without playing in a Super Bowl. And unfortunately, there will be those who look at his body of work and feel like it reflects poorly on him that he hasn't done that. And I just think he's one of these unfortunate historical sports figures that there's somebody in his way, and that somebody is Patrick Mahomes. He is the equivalent in Chicago terms in sports. We talked about it at the early first segment. He's like Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing could never get to the finals or win the finals because Michael Jordan was in his way all the time. And so, likewise, and you mentioned Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, there are other examples.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes is blocking Josh Allen from being having the kind of legacy that he can't enjoy yet. And I don't know if he'll ever get there. I think he'll get to the Super Bowl, but I don't know. You can't guarantee it.
So do you think Lamar gets the Super Bowl?
I don't know. All those things can't be true.
That's what I'm saying. Like, which of those two gets there versus...
How about Joe Burrow?
Yeah. Well,
Joe Burrow might be the best quarterback to not have a
Super Bowl. Joe Burrow's the guy that can beat Mahomes.
I think he can.
Because he has beat him in the playoffs.
Is he ever going to have a defense that is more than just retreads and draft picks? That defense let him down more than anything. Joe Burrow may be the most talented of the guys we're talking about, but it doesn't matter if he's on a team that can't stop anybody. So we've put so much emphasis on a quarterback's legacy based on his ability to win a Super Bowl when it has so much to do with the other people around him. You know, I know it gets to the point, and Mahomes is always going to be the guy you want with the ball late, and he does all the things.
He's unbelievable.
There's so many other facets. Like you mentioned the fourth down play.
Yeah.
Steve Spagnuolo had a great blitz they didn't run before, and they come up with the corner. They disguise it perfectly, and it forces Josh Allen maybe to throw just a tad before he's ready. Kincaid doesn't come down with it, and all of a sudden Josh Allen's legacy is challenged. Okay. But there was a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah, and I get it. But 1-4 in the regular season, 4-0 in the play. It's just
I know.
And it really is, you know, they are. How many times did Tom and Peyton Manning play? I believe Josh Allen is 28, 29. And Mahomes is not much older than that. They've already played four times in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
It's such a great rivalry. They showed highlights from the last epic game that they played in the AFC Championship, and it seemed like it was last week or last month.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of the characters have changed, but they're the same coach, the same quarterback, different receivers, but the same outcome. And that has got to be maddening to be a Bills fan this morning. I wonder how Marshall Harris is handling all this, because he is a Bills fan. Like a lot of Bills fans, you just feel like it's never going to happen. This season seemed to be like their year. Josh Allen couldn't be much better than he has been.
All right, we got to get to our guy, Bruce Levine. We're going to talk to Bruce next, talk about what the Cubs did over the weekend, who they signed, who they didn't sign, and whether or not there was any interesting news that wasn't about the past or the future at Sox Fest. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Baseball.
Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Mully, I didn't see you at the Romova Theater at Sox Fest. Were you hiding, or were you there on Saturday?
No, I did not attend, sadly. I just had to take the weekend off and enjoy stuff, and I couldn't risk annoying myself. I love going to Sox Fest, and I would have gladly gone if I had heard from you, Bruce. But I felt like the idea of going down to the U of I and then driving back with my son so we could go to it and then driving back to U of I didn't think it was fair.
I hear you.
I still love the White Sox.
It was a great weekend for White Sox fans, but a lot of news. Certainly Cub-wise, where do you guys want to begin?
Let's start with the Cubs, Bruce, because I think when you talk about Ryan Pressly coming to a team that needs a closer, did they overpay in getting a $14 million a year closer at 36 years old, especially for a guy who needed to be talked into waiving his no-trade clause? And did he have to be guaranteed the closer job to come to Chicago?
Well, look, they missed out on Scott, right? I mean, they had a four-year offer in on Scott. He went to the Dodgers. They missed out on Yates. He went to the Dodgers. So they had to improve their bullpen with some veterans. They're not done yet. And obviously, this is, I think, on paper, and as you allude to, he's 36 years old, but he's still a very efficient bullpen guy, bumped out of the closer's role for Hader when he went over there a year ago. So this guy, it's been one of the better closers in the game. He was a setup man last year, and they needed to address this bullpen. And there, as I said, there are a couple other veterans out there like Ryan Stanek and David Robertson that they've had conversations with. So I don't think they're done yet as far as getting the bullpen up to
date. But did they have to guarantee him the job before he would execute the trade?
Well, I mean, okay, you're guaranteeing the job. Does the manager say you're automatically, is it a Hader situation where he says, I'm not going to pitch unless I'm the closer? I don't think that's the case. He is going to be your closer. And you know, you have Porter Hodge, who's developing into a fine young power arm in the back bullpen, and he was the Cubs closer. This gives him a chance to continue to develop with him back there as well. And, you know, he will be your closer because he has that status. And, you know, why would you bring him in to be a setup guy? I mean, you're not going to pay him, you know, he's making 14.5. The Cubs are going to pay 8.5, maybe $9.5 million with relocation fees for taxes and coming to Chicago. So I don't think you're going to pay this guy that kind of money to be your setup man.
Does this mean Bregman's not coming? If the Astros then sign him back, does it mean the Cubs taken this guy off their hands, helped give them the money to cut that deal.
Oh, they did, yeah. And I think you start calling the Cubs the Astros East, right? I mean, they're not done with that. Stanek was a former Houston Astro. Bregman, you know, the conversations have been going along about him coming to the Cubs. Never a real long conversation, 5 year, 6 year type situation yet. But you know, there seems to be money made open here for Bregman to come back. And the wonky way that they'd put Altuve in left and Paredes at second base, it doesn't look right. They're still, you know, a ways away from getting Bregman back, but he's always wanted to go back there. He turned down the six-year, $156 million contract from them. And, you know, I would say that he's coming back hat in hand. I think that everything that the manager said and Altuve said over the weekend at their fest in Houston indicates that the door is still open for him to go back.
All right, Bruce, Mark Burley getting a statue is a big deal. July 11th, you circle it on the calendar. That was a great moment Friday at Sox Fest. Are the Sox going to add to this roster before spring training? Because their payroll is very, very low, and the experience level is even lower.
Well, they will, but, I mean, it's not going to be big names, and it's not going to be big money. They will add, you know, to bullpen, you know, again, You have these outstanding-looking young starters coming along. You have guys like Smith and guys in the minor leagues that are coming along. Schultz and Smith are the two top left-handed pitchers rated in the minor leagues. They're going to be coming along this year. So you need to have bullpen people that can take care of those starts. You know, if they're going five, hopefully six once in a while. You know, again, you can't have them going longer than that. The bullpen is going to be the key as to whether or not these young pitchers are going to improve and they're going to have a better record. So I think they'll continue to try to add to their bullpen.
You know, it's interesting because with the White Sox, it's about the past, it's about the future, but it's not really about the right now. In terms of, like, living in the moment, we're looking for a fast-forward button.
You know, it's well put, Mully. It's really well put, the idea that they can't identify what this year is going to look like. So is it going to be 100 losses? Is it going to be 110? Could it be the same as last year? All they are counting on is that they have better talent, young players moving toward being everyday players and pitchers, and that they're going to be better in the future. But you said it right. The right now is hard to identify, and nobody, including you know, everybody with the White Sox, you know, starting with Getz Down, I asked and other people asked, you know, what do you think, you know, people could depend on for a record this year? And they have no answer.
great stuff, Bruce. Hope you had a good time.
Thanks,
at Sox
Bruce.
Fest.
Appreciate
it. All right,
buddy.
Guys, have a great week.
That is Bruce Levine. Always fun to talk to Bruce.
I maintain that this is the line of that remains true about the Sox. They could lose 100 games,
yeah,
and still be the most improved team in baseball.
Right, but I mean, that tells you how bad they were.
It's so
all it
bad.
Tells you. Yeah.
But I just don't know what they're going to add. I don't know who's out there still to add. They need another pitcher to trust. They want to develop their young guys. There's a lot of excitement around those guys. The biggest buzz at the Romova Theater, it was a cool, intimate setting. Colson Montgomery, George Wolko, Brian Ramos, all the guys who are kind of on the way. And you're right. Everything is about, let's hit the fast forward button to get there because the present doesn't
Noah
seem.
Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. We're going to bring in our friend Ross Tucker, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl. And can't wait to get some football ideas out of Russ. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.